Amongst the topics discussed in this week's Parsha, Parshas Pinchas, is Moshe's request that Hashem should appoint someone to be his successor. By way of introduction, let's look at the Psukim for a moment in Chumash Bamidbar, Perek Chaf Zayin, Psukim Tesvav and Tesayin. V'yidaber Moshe al Hashem leimar, Yifkar Hashem elokei haruches lecha basar, ish al ha'ida. Moshe spoke to Hashem saying, let Hashem, who knows the thoughts of every person, appoint a man over the congregation. Right after the appointment of Yehoshua as the upcoming leader, the next topic in the parsha is Hashem telling Moshe to command Bnei Yisrael to offer the Karbanos Tzibur, the communal sacrifices, as the pasuk tells us in Chumash Bamidbar, Perek Chafches, Psukim Aleph Nebeis, Vayedaber Hashem al Moshe Leimar, Tzavis Bnei Yisrael, Va'amarta Aleihem, Es Karbani, Lachmi li Ishai, Reach Nichaichi, Tishmaru Lakriv li B'mayadai. Hashem spoke to Moshe saying, command the children of Israel and say to them, my offering, my food for my fire offerings, a spirit of satisfaction for me, you shall take care to offer to me at its appointed time. The sicha we are going to learn, which is based on these two topics, is a Rashi sicha from Lakotei Sichais, Chelek Yud Gimel. It's Parshas Pinchas, Sicha Beis. Anyone who has had the opportunity to go to yeshiva, to Jewish day school, has been studying Chumash with Rashi since probably the third grade. Many people have the misperception that Rashi is very basic and simple. True, Rashi clearly tells us in his commentary that his goal is to explain the Pshutei Shel Mikra, the simple understanding of the text. Yet at the same time, there is much depth in every single Rashi. And as a result, there are over 200 super commentaries on Rashi. A super commentary is a commentary on a commentary. The Rebbe is certainly a super commentary on Rashi, as we will see exemplified in this sicha. Since the passing of Rebbe Tzinchana on Vav Tishrei, Tavshin Chaf Hei, in 1964, the Rebbe started teaching Rashi Sichas Afar Bringins to honor his mother's legacy, and he continued doing so for many years. As someone who carries Rebbe Tzinchana's name, I feel a personal connection and appreciation for the Rashi Sichas. I have to admit that they're not the easiest Sichas to study, but if you stick with it, you'll have new insight into the depth of Rashi and the Rebbe's brilliance in unpacking it. It is simply breathtaking. Let's begin the sicha. Ois Aleph. On the topic of the Karbanos Tzibur, the communal sacrifices that Hashem told Moshe to command Bnei Yisrael about, Rashi quotes from the pasuk the words Tzavis Bnei Yisrael and says the following: Ma Omer Lamaila Yifkret Hashem. What is stated above? Let Hashem appoint. This is referring to Moshe asking Hashem to appoint a successor. Amar LeHakadosh Baruch Hu. The Holy One, blessed be Hashem, said to him, before you command me regarding my children, command my children regarding me. And Rashi then goes on to bring a mashal about a bas melech that was passing away from this world and was instructing her husband about her children, as is stated in Sifri. This Rashi is telling us the backstory. There was a discussion that took place between Hashem and Moshe when Moshe instructed Hashem to appoint a successor in his place, and the following part of the conversation is not described in the text itself, but is found in Midrashic literature, which Rashi is quoting. Hashem tells Moshe, before you tell me what to do for my children, in other words, before you tell me to appoint a new leader for them, tell my children what to do for me, i.e. to offer karbanos. Rashi then quotes a parable mentioned in the Sifri about a dying princess who instructs her husband to take care of their children after her passing. A fundamental principle of Rashi is that his goal is to explain the pshat of the pasuk, and to do so, he clarifies any difficulties in the text. So, the Rebbe asks, what is bothering Rashi about the words Tzav Es Bnei Yisrael that he feels the need to comment on them? As is classic in the Rebbe's Rashi Sichais, he brings several possible answers and negates all of them before elucidating the final explanation. So the following are some of the possible answers the Rebbe gives to this question. Possibility number one. Perhaps Rashi is trying to define what the word tzav means. This, however, cannot be the case, because Rashi already explained the meaning of that word in Chumash Vayikra, Parshas Tzav. And over there, he said that the word tzav is Lashon Ziruz Miyad Uladaris. It is a term of urging on for now and for generations. This touches on an important principle of Rashi, which is that once Rashi explains something earlier on in the Torah, he does not see the need to repeat himself at a later point. Rashi has very high expectations from us, his students. He expects us to remember what we learned in the past. Possibility number two. There are commentaries, such as the Mizrahi, who say that Rashi is trying to explain the juxtaposition of the topic of the communal sacrifices, the Karbanos Tzibur, to the topic which precedes it, which is Moshe asking Hashem to appoint a successor in his place. The Rebbe challenges this assumption and says that if that were Rashi's goal, he would have opened his commentary with the words Lama Nismacha, which means, why is this topic juxtaposed with the next? We see that Rashi does this in his commentary on other occasions. So if that was his goal, he would have clearly said so. In addition, the juxtaposition of Moshe requesting a successor to the topic of the Karbanos Tzibur is self-understood. They are at the end of 40 years in the desert, and they still have not been told about the Karbanos. So of course Hashem has to tell them about it now. If not now, then when? We are almost at the end of Chumash Bamidbar, and they have to be told about the communal sacrifices before the beginning of Chumash Devarim, which is Moshe summarizing the entire Torah. Possibility number three. Perhaps Rashi is trying to explain the repetitious language of Tzav es b'nei Yisrael v'amarta, command the Jewish people and say to them. One term would have been sufficient, either Tzav or v'amarta. The Rebbe explains this, that this cannot be what is bothering Rashi. Another principle of Rashi is that the Dibur HaMaschil is always precise. The Dibur HaMaschil are the words that Rashi quotes from the text upon which his explanation will be based on. If we look at the Dibur HaMaschil of this Rashi, we will notice that it only includes the words Tzav es b'nei Yisrael. If Rashi was indeed trying to explain the repetition in language, the Dibur HaMaschil would have also included the word Ve'amarta, and not just Tzav es b'nei Yisrael. Furthermore, there are other places where this phraseology is used, and Rashi doesn't feel the need to explain it. So it must be that according to Pshat, this is not a question, and the repetition in language of Tzav and Ve'amarta is a literary device meant to strengthen the commandment. In Eis Beis and Eis Gimel, the Rebbe is going to dissect the mushel of the princess that Rashi quoted, and he asks several questions about it. For starters, how is this mushel helping us understand what Hashem said to Moshe? If anything, the nimshel is better than the mushel. The explanation of the parable appears to be better than the parable itself. How so? Moshe asking Hashem to appoint a successor is understandable and vital. He is requesting the appointment of a leader to take care of all of the Jewish people. And we know, two Jews, three opinions, plus. This leader would have to be able to take care of an entire nation. Yet the mushel Rashi is quoting about a princess on her deathbed, asking her husband to take away to take care of her children, the children she is referring to can't be more than a few in number. And why would the princess need to command her husband to take care of them? It's like when a woman says that her husband is babysitting. Babysitting? He's being a father. He's not babysitting. Wouldn't her husband obviously take care of their children, even without her explicitly telling him to do so? Hashem's commandment to Moshe to tell B'nai Yisrael to take care of him by means of offering karbanos makes sense. After all, the Jewish people, unfortunately, don't have the best track record in listening to Hashem over their years in the Midbar. So we can understand why they need to be warned about following Hashem's command. But in the mashal, in the parable, why would it enter the father's mind that his children would forget about him, to the point that he tells his dying wife, the princess, to command the children to take care of him? It is also interesting that when Rashi quotes this mashal, he concludes by writing, Kide'isa b'sifri, as is stated in Sifri. If Rashi wants the person reading his commentary to look up the parable in Sifri itself, he should have condensed what he wrote and just written, there is a mashal about a princess on her deathbed, as explained in Sifri. On the other hand, if Rashi's goal was for you to know the mashal without having to look it up in its original source, he should have written the mashal in its entirety and not just mentioned some of the details. So what Rashi quotes seems to be neither here nor there. Either quote the whole thing or just direct the reader to the original source. So the Rebbe explains that it must be that it is only the details that he quotes that are relevant to what he's trying to explain. It's also fascinating that if you actually took the time to look up the parable in the Medrash, in the Sifri, you'll find that it's slightly different than the way Rashi writes it. In the Sifri, the parable is about a king and his dying queen, whereas Rashi describes a dying princess who is commanding her husband, who is not a king nor a person of stature. Presumably, there is more than one version of the Sifri, and Rashi must have found a version that described a princess and her husband. Yet, it's surprising that Rashi would quote it that way, because the more widely quoted version of this parable in the Sifri is about a king and queen. And wouldn't that version be more fitting, since Hashem is our king? Another principle of Rashi is, when Rashi quotes the specific source to his commentary, instead of writing in a more general way, the words Rabbi Seinu Darshu, our sages explain, there are two possibilities as to why he would be writing the precise source. And that is either A, to negate a similar idea that is found in another source, but does not fit the simple understanding of the text, or B, looking up the actual source would address an additional question that a Talmid Mamulach, a particularly sharp student, might have. Why in this case does Rashi quote the precise source, the Sifri? It seems to be that Rashi is coming to negate a similar mashal that is written in another Midrashic source, in the Medrash Tanhuma. The mashal written there is about a king who married a woman who had a friend. Every time the king got upset at his wife, her companion would appease the king. When the friend was on her deathbed, she asked the king to please take care of his wife. And the king responded, instead of telling me to take care of my wife, tell my wife to take care of me. The Rebbe asks, why is the mashal from the Sifri, which Rashi is quoting, more appropriate for this context than the mashal that I just summarized, which is written in the Medrash Tanhuma? In Ice Dalet, we finally come to the answer, which we can appreciate more fully after reflecting on all the questions the Rebbe raises and the possible explanation which the Rebbe deems as insufficient. So here goes. The word Sav, Rashi already explained, and as we said before, he expects us to remember what we learned. That word is Lashon Zeros, a term which means to urge on. Who needs to be encouraged and persuaded in this context? The people to whom this mitzvah is applicable to. So the question that Rashi is trying to address is as follows. Why does Hashem tell Moshe, Tzav es b'nei Yisrael, to command the Jewish people? Since the commandment is about offering communal sacrifices, shouldn't it have been directed to Aaron and his children, who are the ones who will actually offer these karbanos? To answer this question, Rashi quotes in the Dibur HaMaschil specifically just the words Tzavos B'nei Yisrael, because that's what his question is based on. So now let's look again at what he says in the first part of this Rashi. Ma'amor lamayla, what is stated above, Yifkai Hashem, let Hashem appoint, which is referring to Moshe's request in the previous topic, asking Hashem to appoint a successor. Amar lei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem says to him, Ad she'ata mitzaveni al banai, tzaveh es banai alai. Before you command me regarding my children, command my children regarding me. Hashem is telling Moshe before his passing that in a general way, he should command, he should urge B'nai Yisrael to listen to Hashem in response, in just juxtaposition to Moshe's request that Hashem take care of the Jewish people by appointing them a new leader. Therefore, we see the parallel language in the text. Moshe says, Yifkai Hashem, which is a commanding language, telling Hashem to appoint a new leader, something which would affect all of the Jewish people. And Hashem responds in turn with Tzav Es B'nei Yisrael, command all of the Jewish people about how they should relate to me, to Hashem. This general statement of Hashem telling Moshe to tell all of B'nai Yisrael to be mindful about Hashem is followed in the pasuk by the words Va'amarta aleihem es karbani. It's followed by the specific mitzvah of offering communal sacrifices. Their devotion to Hashem should be expressed in action. Albeit it is carried out by Aaron and his sons, it is still on behalf of all the Jewish people and brings Hashem great satisfaction. Lest we think we have resolved all the issues, in Aishei, the Rebbe proceeds to raise two questions on this explanation. Number one, when Moshe asks Hashem to appoint a successor, the language he uses is not in the form of a suggestion, but in the form of a directive, an instruction, Yifkai Hashem, let Hashem appoint a successor. How could Moshe speak to Hashem this way? Number two, while Moshe's language seems strong, we have to agree that his request, as we explained earlier, is necessary for the continuity of the Jewish people. As Moshe proceeds to explain to Hashem that B'nai Yisrael should not be like a sheep without a shepherd. However, Hashem's response to Moshe to command his children to take care of him by offering karbanos so that they may create a pleasing aroma for Hashem does not seem as essential. So why would Hashem respond to Moshe's request by saying, before you tell me to take care of my children, tell my children to take care of me? Moshe's request is a necessity, while Hashem's request seems to be a luxury. How can the two be equated? And why would Hashem indicate that his request is even more important and should take precedence? Rashi answers these questions through the mashal, the parable of the dying princess speaking to her husband, and Rashi specifies that this parable is from the Sifri to emphasize that this particular version and details of the parable will address the difficulties we mentioned as opposed to any other version of the mashal. Ois Vav. The princess in the parable is demanding from her husband to take care of her children. Her husband is notably not a king nor a person of stature. Throughout the years of her marriage, she communicated with her husband with the utmost deference and the greatest respect. But when she is on her deathbed, she feels compelled to command her husband to take care of her children, who because of her lineage are grandchildren of the king. Her husband, in turn, asks his wife to command her children to take care of him, using the term tzav, to urge them to do so. Because he is not a king, he is concerned that his children who are grandchildren of the king may treat him with contempt, since he does not come from royalty. Therefore, he asks his wife, who is from royal lineage, to give them a pep talk and urge them to treat their father well. The husband's argument is, rather than you telling me to take care of the children, tell the children to take care of me. The implication is that if the husband was a king, he wouldn't be needy and dependent on his children to take care of him. As king, he would have other servants and attendants to rely on. But since he is not from the royal family, in the absence of his children, he has no one to count on. Similarly, when it came to Moshe using commanding language when asking Hashem to appoint a successor in his stead, Moshe is speaking in this context as a leader, a shepherd. Typically, Moshe communicated with Hashem with the greatest bittul, just like the princess who always spoke to her husband with the utmost respect. But as a true shepherd of a flock who was ready to do anything and everything for his people, Moshe is concerned that the Jewish people should not be left alone like sheep without a shepherd. Prior to his passing, Moshe is like the princess on her deathbed, who commands her husband to take care of her children, whom we see are described in the Torah as mamleches kayanim, as royalty. At the same time, it's important to note that a good number of Bnei Yisrael, Hashem's children, did not behave as they should have up until now. They treated Hashem with contempt, which is precisely the concern of the simple husband in the parable. Therefore, Moshe, who is compared to the princess, has to urge Bnei Yisrael to treat Hashem well, so to say. Hashem is being compared to the husband who is dependent on his children, and therefore the karbanos are not just a nice bonus that provide Hashem with a reach nichayach, with a pleasing aroma, so to say, but the pasuk describes the karbanos also as lachmi, as food, which is a necessity and is essential to Hashem, so to speak. The sicha concludes with a beautiful hayra'ah described in Eis Zion. The relationship between Hashem and the Jewish people is like the relationship between a father and his children. This relationship is consistent, eternal, and is not subject to change. To parallel this, the karbanos tamid, the karban tamid, is a daily consistent sacrifice that gives Hashem great satisfaction and is Hashem's sustenance, so to speak. The Gemara tells us that our prayers have taken the place of the karbanos. If a person thinks to himself, what is the great importance of my personal tefillahs day in and day out? What's the big deal if I were to miss a davening just one day? Not a davening of an important yontif or Shabbos, but what's the big deal if I were to miss a simple weekday davening? This incredible Rashi comes to teach us that Hashem tells Moshe to urge Bnei Yisrael to offer the karbanos day in and day out. In our day and age, this is referring to our tefillos. It is an extremely powerful point that Hashem chooses to make himself vulnerable and chooses to make himself dependent on our tefillos. This is Hashem's sustenance, so to speak, and is more important in certain ways than appointing a leader in Moshe's place. Davening on a daily basis is certainly a struggle for many people, especially for us as mothers of children trying to juggle so much. This sicha is a powerful illustration of how important just one tefillah can be, and is a reminder to try to the best of our ability not to miss out on a davening.